Welcome back to another episode from Rep by Rep Strength Podcast. Today I'm sitting down with Joe Zuback. And Joe, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, man. Why don't you go ahead and just give everybody a little rundown about your background and where you're working right now and where you're wanting to move.
All right. Well, I'm a strength and conditioning professional right now. I'm working out of Torque Strength and Conditioning, which is in St. Paul, Minnesota. Education background, I started off within business and decided that's really not where I wanted to go with my life. So I decided to look elsewhere. And my senior year, I ended up deciding I love nutrition and fitness and health and all that sort of stuff a lot more than I do selling cars or something along those lines. So I decided to get my master's in strength and conditioning from the University of Wisconsin River Falls, and just graduated in May. But during that time, I've been working with military populations, working with firefighters, police officers, EMS. So that's what I've really been doing for the past 2.5 years now, is really focusing on the tactical side of strength and conditioning, trying to bring operational readiness to the tactical population.
Yeah, and we were just talking a few minutes ago about like general preparedness and readiness for, you know, both tactical and general population. So, you know, what are you seeing across the board? Like, I mean, do people even have a good understanding of basic health and nutrition, in your opinion, or what's that looking like for you?
No, it's always an educational process. You know, what I'm trying to do is become an officer in the United States Army right now, where I'd be a registered dietitian working alongside strength and conditioning coaches, and really working on the H2F program right now. So that's, you know, my goal is to be able to bring education to soldiers, especially ones who are coming from areas where they don't have as much information on proper nutrition and training, because that's one of the biggest factors that comes in to being a soldier, is being able to take care of yourself, because you are the one that's on the ground and you're the one taking care of the equipment and making sure everything's working properly. And if you're not educated on how to take care of yourself, are you going to be able to perform at your job, especially to the most optimal level? And what I've seen between general population and soldiers, it's very, very similar. It's, you know, education is big. Making sure they understand what they're eating, why they're eating it, what vitamins and minerals and other things that go along with each of the foods they choose, and how foods affect their overall health in general and how they feel. You know, if you're eating gas station food all the time, or going out to eat every meal and you're wondering why you have gut issues and why, you know, your 2 mile time suffering and stuff like that. It's, you know, you have to start looking at like, what am I doing in my daily life? And, you know, that even goes to the general population on if they're sitting behind a desk all day and they're, you know, eating donuts and drinking too much caffeine and not getting enough sleep. It's just like, you know, you have to look at what are these factors in my life that are really affecting me that I can control. And, you know, that's one of the things I want to focus on throughout my career, is making sure people understand like they are in control of their health and their own well-being.
Yeah. So like, it sounds like a more holistic viewpoint, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Because that's one thing I'll talk to you guys about pretty frequently, is it's multifactorial. Like it's not just as simple as like come in and work hard in the gym when you're there. I mean, it's the other 23 hours of the day. I know that sounds cliche, but
really, it's true though.
Yeah, I mean, just getting these guys to understand, like, hey, man, like you put no calories in your body today, and if you have, it's been, I mean, to your point, like a granola bar or maybe an apple along with a granola bar if I'm lucky.
Or they went to Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Why is my stomach all messed up right now?
Yeah, man, it's like, hey, the quality of what you're putting in matters. You know, but there's always a better option, or, you know, let's, you know, exactly what you were saying, is just educate them as much as possible so they can make more informed decisions.
But, you know, to that point, and especially with soldiers and being in the barracks and all that sort of stuff, you know, it's one of the biggest complaints is having access to quality nutrition. You know, they have the DFAC, but you know, how often are they able to get to it, to get to the food? What are their work schedule like? You know, if they can't get there because of transportation issues, then it comes down to, well, you know, do I have the ability to go to the store and grab something? Yes or no. If yes, you know, what kind of things can I keep within the barracks that are going to be, you know, nutritious, you know, fruits and vegetable, or fruits really that you can have that won't spoil. If you have a refrigerator, you can have vegetables in there. You can have, you know, lean meat snacks that you can keep in there, you know, things that you can microwave, like you can have microwavable eggs, as nasty as that sounds. I mean, it's one of those things you can do. So it's like, you can have these options to make snacks and have healthy snacks alongside, you know, living in places like the barracks where you don't have access to, like if you're on a college campus, going down to the dorm or going to, you know, walk into Walmart or something like that. So it's, you know, there's always options that soldiers have to be able to go ahead and choose. And, you know, it's comes down to the education piece again of like telling them like, hey, you can go ahead and do this, or you can go have this opportunity.
Yeah. I think one of the most popular ones I see was, I was out with some guys the other day on a training exercise, and, you know, I wasn't carrying the rucks that these guys were carrying. You know, I was just hanging out with them while they're doing their training. But whenever they had a stop point, the most popular foods I saw were, you know, beef jerky, trail mix, and, you know, then some dried fruits, you know, were pretty much, it's pretty much across the board for everybody. And then of course, like everybody's, the technology is just getting better and better all the time in terms of understanding, you know, hydration levels and how to refill that, so to speak. Cause it's not just guys drinking water now. It's guys, okay, let's put Gatorade in, or let's have Gatorade instead, or
the liquid IV.
Yeah. That's the one I've seen now, is liquid IV. And then, guy brought me one last week from, it was like approved or developed through the CDC or something.
Okay.
But it's a new one that I'd never heard of before, but it's a step in the right direction. Like these guys are starting to understand the importance of, hey, you know, hydration and fueling your body actually matters, you know?
Right.
But yeah, like we were talking a little bit ago about training and about doing the simple things very well. So when you first start working with guys, I mean, are they even coming in with a basic understanding of how to squat, how to deadlift, any of that stuff? Or are you starting at, you know, block zero?
Depends on the person. I've seen it where they're very capable of squatting, benching, deadlifting. Even some of them are really good at Olympic lifting. I've also seen a lot of the times where they have, you know, at square zero, they've never stepped foot in the gym before. The only thing that they've heard of exercise is running. Mm-hmm. And, so then it's, you know, you're starting from square zero and teaching them and having them understand, you know, proper movement patterns. And, you know, you see coaches out there and you see other trainers and they're like, we're going to load you up today. You know, you've never done anything in the past, but you're going to be squatting 315 or benching 315 by the end of today's session. And it's like, well, let's take a step back and let's look at you as an individual and like, what are your biggest weakness points and what can we do to really fix that? You know, it's like, if we're going to, you know, teach them to squat, maybe we're going to have them do a goblet squat first, or maybe even have them do a sandbag squat, or maybe they can't even do that. And it just got to be a bodyweight squat to teach, you know, at first. So, you know, I've seen it all from, you know, practically an elite athlete to, you know, never stepped foot in the gym before. And it's up to the coach to be able to decide like, hey, where are we going to place you? And what is it going to look like for your training to make, you know, whatever your goal is to be obtained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that works best. You know, here's what we've got. Here's one progression, one regression, so to speak, but the regression's not bad. It's just understanding, okay, this is where you are. This is where this guy's at. And getting them to understand the principles of everything, you know, and to your point about the, you know, let's max it and see what we can do. You know, I'm not a big fan of the percentages for that reason, especially in that type of environment where there's highly competitive people that are going to, you know, push through poor positions.
Or if you're working, you know, I've worked with police officers and the last thing you want to do is one, injure them so they can't even be on duty. And that goes for military as well. But, the other thing too is being too sore. So if you're working off of percentage-based programs, like maybe they did too much on one day and they can't perform on their shift, or they're too sore to go ahead and you know, have a takedown on a guy getting away. So it's what I've ended up doing is going off of, you know, reps in reserve or rating a perceived exertion. I've even tried mixing them together, seeing how that's worked. And, you know, it auto-regulated programs for this population, in my opinion, I feel it is the best way to go, just because, you know, if you're going to be like, hey, work up to a heavy single today, and it's like, this is all I can do, you know, I don't want to push it too much. You know, it comes down to, can they understand their body, and which comes with education and teaching them, you know, what that's like. But it makes them able to have a say in what they're doing with their training too. So it builds more buy-in and be like, hey, you know, this is what I'm going to work up to today. Or maybe we can try this, no, not percentage, but just like feel, you know, RPE 2, like RPE 7 or 8, and bringing that up to an RIR 1 or something. You know, it goes in between. It's a weird concept being able to use RPE. So it'd be like, it's almost like a fatigue stop with RPE and RIR in the same. Yeah. So it's like, you're going to be at an RPE 8. And I don't know. I was listening to Max Marzo on it, because that's who I had one of my internships with, and he was trying to explain it to me. So I've been messing around with it myself a little bit more, and it's a interesting concept.
Yeah, no, that's literally what I do and how I outline. You know, because I'll explain to guys, you know, for some of you guys, the following is going to click and make more sense than the other. Choose accordingly. You know, so I'll explain RIR. You know, the whole concept of, you know, we're never going to be at zero, because that would mean you died, you know, right, but if like 1, 2, and 3, maybe a 4 RIR, and then for the RPE, getting them to understand, like it's going to take some time to understand how that shift happens, and what you used to perceive as difficult is no longer, you know, what you perceive as difficult now. And then, you know, basically we'll adjust volume on the front side. We've just got some just jump mats. So we'll use 3 max jumps on the front side of the training session, and then use a simple stoplight system where, okay, if they're green today, like they're breaking a record, you can push weights a little bit more and we can be a little more plus minus if need be. If we're in the yellow zone, like we're dropping 5% off of your best, okay, let's drop a set but add a rep to everything. And then, you know, from there, if you're red, if you're dropping 10%, we're going to drop 2 sets, add 2 reps to everything that we have planned. And that way, like I explained to him, if you are honest and completely trust what I'm saying, over the long term, this is going to work out in your favor. But if you're trying to get in a dick measuring contest with everybody and say, like, you know, well, I squatted more than him, sure, my 4 reps look like shit, it doesn't work out, especially not in your favor, you know. But that's the hard part, is getting these guys to really understand the implications of training today and what that's going to do and how that's going to influence your next week of training, your next month. You know, those residuals stick around, and they may not fully realize them for a while.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've seen too, is just making, you know, they don't always have to push themselves into the ground, or, you know, just, you know, we're going to go into a smoke session today. It's like, you don't need it. You know, I mean, every once in a while, yeah, sure, whatever, Friday, if you want to do it and I'm not seeing you over the weekend, we can wreck you. And then Monday, you're good to go. But, you know, it's like I said, once you go back to the job, you know, if you're a police officer, the last thing you want to do is, the last thing you don't want to happen is being able to move. So it's always interesting to see, especially, I don't have access to the jump mats or anything like that. So it's going off of like, hey, when you walk into the gym, or if you message me, and, you know, I can just kind of see, like, hey, you're not doing well today. We're going to have to take a step back. You're in some pain right now. So, you know, that's what I do. I like doing, just like questionnaires, you know, before a session, just like, how you doing, how you feeling, how, you know, yesterday go with the bench session, or, you know, something along those lines. And then also just how their stress is throughout their job, because I mean, you know, these guys come in and talk about that. So that's how I run it. And, you know, if I gotta regress, I gotta regress. If we can push it on a day, we can push it on a day. It's you know, it's very open to change. You know, that's one thing with tactical populations that coaches need to realize, is just like, it's not set in stone whatsoever because it can change instantly. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to work up, you got to go. And it's, you know, that's what I've found anyways.
No, man, I agree with that 100%. I think that's one of the things that, you know, I've seen a lot more probably in the past 2 or 3 years where, I mean, we have automation for everything else. Why wouldn't we automate training? You know, I mean, like the AI stuff, the computer stuff is great, but what you were just describing about the human element, absolutely necessary. Like human to human, you can just read it. And I've found as a coach over the years, you just get better and better and better about being perceptive and just like feeling the room to a degree or feeling the individual and knowing, okay, something's off with this dude, you know? And you can see it in the eyes. Sometimes you can feel it, but, yeah, I mean, making those,
how they walk in.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. It's like, why is your body language crap? You know, what's going on? But, yeah, I think that's one thing that the AI will never be able to do is, you know, just because AIs don't have that human element, you know?
But, so all the people concerned about AI taking over strength coaches' jobs, it's not going
to
happen.
I don't think so. I think it's too important to have someone there on the floor feeling the room and mm-hmm. the session and, you know, being able to make those adjustments on the fly.
Yeah.
Yeah, for some reason everybody likes stuff to be set in stone and automated, and this is hyper rigid and so on. But sometimes stuff just doesn't go according to plan. You got to make halftime calls. But
yeah, totally agree.
So something else we were talking about was you mentioned guys being like quad dominant, working on posterior chain, that kind of thing. Is that something else that you're seeing pretty consistently? Is weak posterior chains on everybody?
So, you know, as you see, young guys getting into the gym, so if they're, you know, 18 years old and they're in the Army and they're starting to work out, what are they going to go for? Is everything they can see in the mirror? Mm-hmm. So it's like you have this whole other part of your body that you need to work on, and that's what's going to make you work in the field. So you got your, you know, work. If we're doing a belt squat like you're talking about earlier, if someone's never squatted before, we can put them into that position, but if they don't know how to use their glutes or hamstrings to activate a movement too, you know, it puts them at a disadvantage for all the movements that they need for their job. So, you know, we're going to really need to start focusing on glutes, hamstrings. Hamstring injuries are pain to come back from. Mm-hmm. As you know, if you have guys with that, you know, then working on a strong back too. A lot of guys want to neglect their back, or if they are going to do back, just pull ups and just like, well, you have a whole nother portion, you know, let's do some horizontal pulling instead of just vertical pulling on stuff. So that it's being able to teach like, hey, why don't we just try all these different things to see how you're going to become, you know, a better, you know, infantryman or soldier, or whatever your MOS is. It's just like, what can we do to make you better at that job? And people really forget that the whole back part of the body needs to be trained, including calves. And I know a lot of people don't like training calves, but they're an important part to, you know, the whole ankle complex. If you're in boots all day, that is a huge thing that needs to be worked on. You know, injuries there, you know, if you can't control your foot and ankle, I mean, it's just like, that's game over. I mean, that's one of the things that I've seen that strong feet win. So
what are you doing specifically to work on the ankle calf complex to combat guys being
so floating ankle stuff? Cal Dietz, I know that some people don't like the stuff he does, but I feel like it works. Yeah. I also do, you know, I put arbitrary as it is, it's just like, can they do 15 reps single leg for body weight on, you know, calf raises? If they can do that, you know, that's a good start for them. Then I'll just do seated calf raises as well. You know, sometimes even being in like a squatted position and having, and just doing calf raises that way too. It's trying all different things to see what's going to work for someone and what's going to carry over. But the floating ankle, I think that's called what it's called, but yeah, the Cal Dietz stuff is working really well. Also doing barefoot training too. Don't want to be that guy that's like, oh, all barefoot and stuff like that. But, different exercises, it does work to be in barefoot, to be able to feel like what your body's doing. And then why are you going to move to one way over another way? You know, we can start looking at that. I like using sandbag implements to really tell that too. Like, are you having ankle collapse on certain issues? And, or certain reasons for that, or you know, how are you going to supinate or pronate off of, you know, working with a sandbag? Because, you know, awkward loading movements and awkward implements I found are very important for the technical population, because you never know what's going to happen. I mean, you have, you know, you could have a guy down, you need to drag him.
Yep.
You need to pick up a sandbag, an actual sandbag, and load it. You know, if you have, firefighters carrying stuff, rope pulls, you know, a lot of those different things, it's really involved in the tactical community. So it's like, can you do all that sort of stuff? And are we seeing any issues, you know, around it? Right. So that's why just barefoot training on certain things works out well. So you can start to see, like, why are you moving in one direction over another?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you bring that up, because weekly, just scheduled in our training, we have outside, like, we just straight up go outside and do awkward object day. And it's, you know, we have sleds that are loaded extremely heavy. We have other sleds that are heavy as well that we drag. And then from there, it can be an option of, you know, whether you're doing a waiter walk, front rack carry, Zercher, sandbag, whatever, you just have to carry something that is not well calibrated, you know?
Right.
So we had guys carrying, one of the smaller guys kind of surprised me. He was carrying a 125 pound, one of those black Rogue sandbags. And we had just practiced earlier in the week doing Zercher squats. So this guy, you know, gets down to that bottom position, loads it up, stands up, walks, you know, 75 yards or whatever. And at the end of the session, we come back around. It's like, all right, does everybody understand why we Zercher squat now? And you're going to be in these awkward positions. You have to understand tension and bracing and all of these things. But yeah, I 100% agree with the awkward objects, because you never know what's going to go on for these guys or where they're going to be. Because the terrain is not like this nice level terrain. It is up in the mountains.
You got to be resilient.
Yeah.
You got to be resilient. You know, God forbid a Humvee gets rolled over or something like that, gets hit with something, you know, you got to get a guy out. I mean, you're in a position where your body isn't with a straight bar, right? I mean, you got to be able to, you know, load things, pick things up. I mean, if you're going to equate it to a training way, you could do a deficit sandbag deadlift. I mean, if they can't do that, you can do a deficit, you know, regular barbell deadlift, but I mean, a deficit sandbag deadlift, I mean, that,
I'm going to steal that
moving
one.
Moving all over the place, and you got to get it out. So, I mean, it's kind of, it's just these things that I really, if you can't tell, I like sandbags.
Hell yeah, man.
So it's these things that, you know, you have to look at what the job is. And I mean, there's really not a lot of footage, you know, for you to go out there and look at, you know, like gameplays of football and stuff for tactical world. But I mean, the stuff you can find and speaking with guys and getting and really talking with them, like, hey, what have you experienced? Mm-hmm. Like, what are some of the things that you saw when you were ever deployed, you know, if they were deployed, like, and you wish you were able to be better at? And it's just like, well, it's kind of bringing into the needs analysis. And it's
right.
A lot of coaches skip that step and they're like, oh, well, I learned this from, you know, my textbook, like, we're going to do it this way. And just like, well, this is a population that isn't well studied. Yep. And, you know, that's the thing that's changing right now. I mean, there's a lot of good people out there doing it. But, you know, it's like, what can we do from actual firsthand experience? Mm-hmm. What research is out there right now where we can actually start building a model that is aimed towards tactical populations other and not taking directly from football or soccer or hockey or something like that. So it, you know, don't skip the needs analysis for tactical. It's a completely different game. And, you know, mobility is one of the things that a lot of people end up skipping. And Vernon Griffith's out there doing great things of really, you know, with the hips. And that's huge, huge for the military. Huge. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I meant spot on, because the, man, like the mobility stuff, like I've started doing some RPR every day. We start out with RPR and then, you know, working with Donnie Thompson and the body tempering, that's been big, because I got that from Coach Schwinn down at the 58th, and he introduced me to tempering. Have you ever had tempering done?
I have not, and I don't know if I want to, because I've seen it.
If he would have told me what he was going to do, I would have been like, no, I don't want to do it. But he's just like, yeah, just lay down here. We're just going to roll this tool over you. Man, it hurt like hell doing it, but afterwards everything opens up. You get some release, and it's different than a foam roller, because a foam roller, you can kind of guard when you get into like your lat if it's a spot you don't like. But with if you're working a temper up and down there, you put your arm up overhead, you're on your side, and if there needs to be another guy right there, I mean, you can't do anything about it. So that's been big for our guys. But yeah, as far as like hands-on experience, like I've been able to go out a couple days on different trips with these guys and experience what they experience on a super small scale.
Mm-hmm.
And then trying to figure out, okay, if I was doing this X number of days that they are, compounded over time, what are the implications of that from training? Like, it's no wonder when I first got to this base and I was reading all the reports about, how many military wide, how many knee injuries were there last year? How many hip injuries, low back injuries? And the list goes on, because it's money, it's missed time. And now you're talking, especially most importantly on a personal level, these, mm-hmm. like I've ran into guys who are 24 years old and have had a hip replacement. Like that, mm-hmm. this boggles my mind. That should never happen.
Nope. That goes back to posterior training as well. I mean, if knee problems come from a lot of times, not saying all the time, but a lot of times, it's a quad dominant movement pattern. So if they're always using their quads, they don't know how to use, fire their hamstrings and glutes. I mean, it's where a lot of issues come from. If you look at a lot of the running too, I mean, if they're, PT every morning, if all they're doing is running every day, day in and day out, you're going to start running into patella issues, especially if it's on a pavement. Mm-hmm. If they're striking the ground, toes pointed down, that causes a lot of issues as well. So I mean, it's even getting into the points of teaching proper running mechanics.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, a lot of the training they're going to be doing is in running shoes, and they're not actually going to be in full kit or anything like that, but just teaching proper running mechanics, will it carry over to when they are wearing everything? Possibly, but you mm-hmm. can also go ahead and take a look at it too. If they're doing ruck marches and stuff like that, like how are they positioning the ruck on them? Is it fitted properly? Because some guys don't do that, and then that causes a lot of low back pain. Are they leaning forward too much? And then you also have to look at how was their ruck actually packed. Some guys just throw stuff in there, anyone listening to this who's been in the military knows that you don't pack a ruck right. I mean, you're in bad shape. So it comes down, you have to look at all the factors, and it's just the more data points you can get as an individual looking at stuff, the better it is. Be like, hey, maybe this could be causing X and Y, and then you have to kind of work back from that. If anyone hasn't read Building the Elite, I highly recommend it. They go over a lot of this sort of stuff too. I think it's Craig Weller, and Jonathan Pope. Could be getting that totally wrong, but Building the Elite, that's a great, great resource if people are looking into military training as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, again, back to that same training exercise that I was attending the other day, these guys, before they go out there, they're getting their rucks checked one more time. And one guy had the loading was inappropriate. His heaviest object was on the bottom. His lightest stuff was on top. And, they took a step back and went over it with everybody. They're like, hey, here's why you don't do this. And here's how it's going to load your body improperly. And it's going to result in boom, boom, boom. Mm-hmm. And all right, fair enough. But yeah, exactly. The same thing with running mechanics. They need to have, that's something that needs to be implemented with these guys, because I don't know, I always think of the example with LeBron versus Wade when it comes to injuries and whatnot. And it's one small piece, but LeBron generally has his feet more underneath him. Whereas if you go back and look at Dwayne Wade's career, he's going to be out front, outpacing, heel striking first, that kind of thing. Yeah. With impact force traveling less than favorable, So just one thing to look at with these guys too is, what's happening if they're supinating their foot too much, pronating their foot too much, heel strike, all this stuff where they need to be educated on it from running specialists,
And getting proper footwear too, and not always going for the cheapest option for shoes and wondering why your feet are getting all blistered up. you know, take care of your feet. Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing that's carrying you. So,
yeah. So let's see, what else are you going over with these guys? So you're talking to them about nutrition and proper training and whatnot. Like, what kind of monitoring are you doing throughout their, cause you said you're working with guys that are getting ready to go to selection courses, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
So monitoring them is, they're very driven people, a lot of them, to the point where it's almost a detriment to them.
Yeah.
And, where they always just want to keep doing more and, or they do more than what I prescribe just because they think that, you know, that's going to help them become, you know, get into the pipeline quicker, or, you know, it's going to make training easier, where it's just like, no, you just got to take a step back. Really got to focus on like, hey, am I having proper movement patterns? Am I progressing correctly? Cause you know, you get a client right away and they're just like, hey, I want to just get wrecked from day one until I leave. And it's just like, that is, please, no. It's just like, you know, we got to build into it. You know, every coach knows you're not going to just start on like step nine when they should be on step one. So it's making sure that they understand, like, we need to slowly build into this. I mean, this could be a year long process for you to even get to, you know, starting the pipeline. So it's just like the slower we start, the more room you have to make progress. And explaining that to them is always tough at first, but then they start to understand and they start to see improvements and going that way, monitoring them through, since a lot of these guys are online, you know, I'll have them use Garmin, I'll have them use Strava to make, you know, seeing if their paces are right. I'll have them use heart rate zones if they have access to a heart rate monitor. If not, I use Jack Daniels run calculator. So that's really good to see, like, what was their most recent 1 mile time, recent 2 mile time. And then you plug that into the calculator and then it kind of like spits out like what training. So if you're going to go out there and do an easy run, it's just like, well, let's just say your 2 mile time was 13:30. So you're going to have like an easy run. I believe it's around like almost, 8:30 mile or closer to the 9 minute mile. And it just kind of keeps them in check. So they're like, hey, I can build on this. Or if we're doing intervals today, I can push it at this point, or doing a threshold run, push it there. So it's like kind of monitoring that way, getting their daily training reports. Like, hey, did this work? Did this not work? Should we take a step back from this? Oh, you know, doing some sort of overhead press hurt my shoulder. Well, let's take a video of it next time to see what you're doing. Cause especially if you're going to buds, you got a lot of stuff overhead. So the last thing you want to do is hurt them overhead work wise, but we also want to make sure like why does it hurt overhead?
Right.
A lot of things I've seen too is, you know, how to do neck training. A lot of people forget the necks for training on pipeline stuff. So it's, that's gotta be worked on. You don't need to do 50 miles a week for running. That's another thing that people think they need to do is like, you don't need to do it, especially right away. It's like, you know, it's built into it. You know, junk miles can end up really hurting you on the long run. You know, it's always quality over quantity. So it's just like, if you can build up to doing, you know, 40 miles a week of quality running and you can recover from it, great. But if you're not recovering, then really just digging yourself into a hole. And the last thing you want to do is show up to a selection process hurt and broken, because it's just going to get worse from there. So it's like you get them into a point where like they feel good and they can get into the pipeline. So that's what I've really seen, is making sure that they've got a solid, you know, head when they're going in. Cause I mean, that's another thing you work on. Building delete really gets into that of mental stuff. And then making sure that they're not doing too much when they get to the pipeline, they're crushed. Cause I mean, it's just bad.
Yeah. And there was a guy the other day, he had his ruck on, and you know, the smoke out here in Washington is pretty bad right now from, you know,
it's bad in Minnesota here too.
Yeah. Oh, is it really? Is it getting that bad too?
Yeah.
Cause that, you know, we looked at the AQI and can we go outside or not? And the AQI was, I think it was 178, which is hot. That's very high. So, you know, this guy needed to do his training indoors, and he put on his ruck and he went on a Woodway treadmill, Woodway curve, And he was on that for literally 3 hours.
Mm.
And, you know, talking to him afterwards, I'm like, what are you following? Like, where are you getting this from? And how, like, why is that the number you need to be going after right now? You know, and trying to get him to understand how this acute session is going to affect everything globally.
Mm-hmm.
Because he did that. He probably did that Thursday. So yeah. If I see him on Monday, he might still be destroyed. I have no idea, yeah. You know, but
well, it was like what you're talking about earlier about the Russian sports scientists and how, you know, they really started to, we're what, 30 years behind where they are since the Soviet Union collapsed. So it just like, everyone's like, we just need volume, always volume. It's like, oh, take a step back here a second.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it depends on what drugs you're putting in, you know, like how much volume are you going to be able to recover from? But yeah, man, that's the big, you know, thing that I've come to realize is, you know, there was another guy when I first got here that was, he showed me his workout. It's from this company. I'm not going to say what company, but it's just absurd. Like whoever's there, I don't think anybody has any kind of quals. Like there's no way, because it's just insane volume. And I was like, hey man, I know we just met, but trust me on this. How about you cut everything you're going to do, keep it all in there, cut it in half. Literally take everything they've assigned you, cut it in 50% off.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, all right, I'll do it for a week. And performance started to go up, 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 up. And now he's no longer with that company following their training programs. It's like, yeah, man, you need far less than you think because you are so active all the time.
Mm-hmm. And guys aren't eating enough either. I mean, they're out there, they're only eating like, you know, 2,000, 3,000 calories a day when they should probably be eating, you know, 6,000.
Yeah.
You know, it's comes to access of food once again, as we were talking about earlier. And it's like, are they in the barracks and do they have access to it? I mean, it's like, but you also have to fuel yourself. Then we have to get into the, you know, talking about sleep and how the military is with that. I mean, if you're not recovering and issues arise from that and leads to, you know, nicotine use and alcohol abuse and stuff like that. So it's, it's a systemic problem that needs to be like addressed. Big time.
Yeah, because the nutrition piece, you know, from what guys have told me about the DFAC, and they send, you know, they'll give you a 2 or 3 ounce protein portion. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the DFAC needs specific instructions on the type of guys that I'm working with. So it's like, you need to understand their physical demands are much different than, like, I don't know, an accountant, you know, or whatever, like a military accountant or something. I mean, that guy's probably not doing anything. And, we have to, the big thing is like for our 6 months that guys are here, for their selection, it's like they need to account for about a 30-pound loss once they start team. And that's considered average. So if they get here and they weigh 150 pounds, all right, man, you're going to be like 120 pounds with the same relative weight that you have to carry around.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather you get, this sounds bad, but I'd rather you get fat and like put on some bulk so that you have it to lose and draw from, as you know, you're going to be in a huge caloric deficit.
No, I 100% agree, guys that I've worked with, you know, it's like, you know, just add a couple because you're gonna lose it. And, you know, it might, your scores might not be like top of the top right now, but it's going to be worth it at the end when the guys who are at that top are also trailing behind you now, because mm-hmm. you got to the weight you need to be at, type of thing. So, I mean, if you're, you know, 2-3% above the body fat percentage you're normally at for training, and you just kind of push it up there, and it's like, you're going to be sitting a little bit better than some others. So it's an important thing, and nutrition definitely should not be overlooked.
Yeah.
Same with recovery. You know, just don't take recovery for granted, especially like, you know, when you're young, you know, 18 years old, something like that. I mean, you can pretty much do anything to your body and you're going to be bouncing back from it. But then as soon as you hit like 25, it's just, shit.
Yeah, 100%. It's funny to watch to see how like the different age groups, you know, do their preparatory work every day. Like, you know, the 18-year-olds might like, nah, I'll do it. But they go through it quickly, and the older guys are like, I'm going to take this a little more seriously. But yeah, same thing with the going back to the sleep that you mentioned a minute ago. You know, their sleep habits are a disaster. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're trying to implement some new sleep strategies for them to make sleep more of a requirement. But you know, whether or not that's actually happening is you know, yet to be seen. So
I think the Navy's making it mandatory. You get 6 hours of sleep a night or something like that. And they're actually tracking it, which is cool. They have like, I don't know if it's like a wrist monitor or something, but I saw something along those lines that they're having officers and enlisted do that, which is important because of, you know, you don't want issues on the sea with guys falling asleep behind things. And I think that should be implemented across military wide just because how important it is, not only for recovery, but decision-making.
Yep.
You know, the last thing you want is guys walking around like zombies and having to make split second decisions and they can't.
Yeah.
So, you know, that it's important to get sleep.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was, I think they mentioned that at the TSAC this past week. One of the first lectures was, you know, what happens if you have, if you're underslept, what happens if you're overslept, you know, where you're getting into like 12 hours of sleep. And then what if you're like a normal amount of sleep, what they would probably say 7 to 8 hours or whatever. But, you know, I know a bunch of the tactical guys were kind of scoffing at it because like, when and how are we going to get uninterrupted sleep, you know, but she did come back to it and touch on, you know, here's the importance of a nap. Here's how a nap can be implemented. Just again, coming back to the education piece that we mentioned, you know, educating these guys on everything is going to be huge so they can actually apply the stuff.
Like the 30-minute nap in the afternoon, if you can get it, or 10-minute cat nap here, 10-minute cat nap there. I mean, it makes a big difference instead of just always trying to push through it. Also, you can get into the use of caffeine.
Yeah.
You want to go down that rabbit hole and just really pumping yourself full of stuff. I mean, it's there. I mean, if like you're going to use coffee and stuff like that, sure, go ahead. But if you're constantly putting, you know, if you're Monster, Rain, or one of the other ones out there, Bang, you know, if you're constantly using that, there's a whole bunch of other things in there too, other than caffeine, that you're putting in your body that may or may not be beneficial.
Yeah. And that's all that they claim is in there too. And like the quote unquote proprietary blend, you know, it's like,
what is this blend actually?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man, that was the other thing that shocked me is there is an actual list of, you know, hey, this supplement list you can get popped hot for if they drug test you and,
use that NSF for sport, just be safe. Don't, you know, anyone in the military right now listening to this, just don't take something and hope that it's going to be the best. Another thing that I've found is if you are taking a supplement and you don't want to check, keep a little bit of that supplement and the bottle. Because you can be like, hey, I didn't know it was in this and it was a contaminated supplement, and you can show it to them. Be like, hey, this is what I have.
Oh, so they can test that piece.
Yep. Okay. Like, hey, I had no idea this is what was in it. And you know, it's just smart move. Just cover your bases.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. The one that some guys have introduced me to is Mountain Ops. Have you tried any of their stuff?
I have not. No, I've been using Thorn for a while. It makes life easy.
I see a lot of good things with Thorn and a lot of people using that. Mm-hmm. So I still have yet to try it. But yeah, the Mountain Ops is supposed to be from military members. Like I think it's some military member founded it. So I we'll have to double check, but I'm pretty sure it's NSF certified or whatever. But yeah, what Thorn stuff are you messing with?
Creatine. I like their beta alanine, which is like a slow release. Their magnesium at night, kind of like chill out. It's really about it. I don't really take too many supplements. I just, you know, I try to make it up, get it all from food sources, because you don't want to OD on a specific certain something. I mean, just kind of cover your bases, protein powder, creatine, beta alanine, kind of call it a day.
Yeah, that's the other thing that cracks me up is I have these young guys run up to me and ask like, hey, what supplement? We start with, okay, well, hold on a second. Did you have breakfast this morning? Mm-hmm. Well, no, but okay. I don't want to talk to you anymore. It's like, go away. Eat breakfast, then you're lunch.
talk, if you're eating everything and you're still having issues with stuff, then we can start looking at supplementation. But if you're skipping every meal, you know, it's another thing that needs to be addressed too, is like, stop skipping. You know, supplements aren't a cure all.
Right. What other stuff you want to cover? Anything in particular, or things you've been seeing?
1x20 method works well for people who are just getting into training. Dr. Yeses is 1x20 method. Yeah.
Yeah.
So have you heard of it?
I remember seeing it. I haven't bought it yet.
Okay. Well, it's like, so you'd pick one exercise, or not one, you'd, his premise is like, there's so many parts of the body that need to be trained, right? So if you got a vertical push, you got a vertical pull, you know, horizontal push, horizontal pull. And then you can also pick all the different muscle groups, and you have to understand how each muscle works and stuff, but you can pick exercises that are aimed at each of the, the way that you want the body to move for a specific thing. So you do one set of 20 reps. So it's like, this is almost like a failure set. Like, you might not, they might not even make it to the 20 reps. And you try and get them to get the 20 reps, like every time for like, let's just say like 2-3 weeks. And then you would bump down to maybe like 18 reps, then 16, and then you could go 14. And then you kind of just kind of like recycle through that process. And it really has their numbers go up. You're hitting everything quick in and out of the gym. Do it like 2-3 times a week. And it just kind of seems to work well for very novice athletes. Mm-hmm. So that's what that's one thing I found that works pretty well. Okay. Also doing like maybe like a little bit of metabolic conditioning at the end of like a session, like a 20-minute EMOM or 10-minute EMOM or something like that. Just kind of gets them, they get their, you know, they get smoked at the end of a session, and it's like they feel good, but it's not doing so much where it's going to harm them for the next time they come in.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, that's what I've been playing around with right now and just seeing how that works. It's been working decently.
Yeah.
Because the quarterback.
Yeah, because you kind of break it down into like, you know, you got your impact cardio and non-impact cardio is how I'll explain it to these guys. And then, you know, that's the great part about sleds is, you know, it's really not, there's no eccentric component. So, I mean, unless you're absolutely obliterating somebody, they're not going to be trashed right the next day. They should be good. So we've been doing a lot of like sled relays, and sometimes it'll be weighted and all sorts of stuff just to throw in some stuff in the mix.
Oh, another thing we should, you know, I'd like to just address for just like a short little bit is not doing everything, you know, front and back, right? So we're just going to keep everything in the sagittal plane. Let's, you know, let's move out. Let's go to the transverse. Let's get some rotation. Let's get some frontal plane work side to side. So it's, you know, you have a whole body, you need to train it. And especially mm-hmm. within a tactical population, you don't know what's going to occur. So you should mm-hmm. be able to move your body in every way. Just be able to move your body. Mobility is very important.
Yeah.
Very important.
Yeah, for sure. So like, I'll break down stuff where I'm going, like, you know, if I have a DUP kind of layout cycle, you know, on the strength focused day, it's heavy bilateral work on the front side. And then on the back side of that strength day, we still will implement a lot of unilateral work,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then, on the power day, we'll generally do, you know, we'll go vertical, but we'll also go forward, do rotational throws. I really like the med ball. You take a partner, you spread out, you know, probably 4 or 5 yards, you throw a med ball every which way possible within the zone that they could actually catch it.
Oh, yeah.
Teaching them different ways to absorb, transfer, and create force.
Mm.
You know, so like, those are some things that we'll throw in, but you know, what's some stuff that you like to add in from a rotational standpoint?
Rotation with med balls. I like doing that. I also like using like bands attached to a rig. So that kind of really making sure that they're getting the hips through.
Like on an RDL? Or do you mean like you have it hooked up to?
Like I have the band hooked up to the side and they're like kind of like pulling it.
Okay, I got you.
It'd almost be like a baseball swing, but kind of, because okay. I mean, if you think about it, like breaching, kind of yep. hitting that with the sledgehammer type of thing. Doing that, there's, you know, it got mace work kind of with things, playing around with that a little bit. Not too big into that, but done that with rotation. Also doing like with sleds, if we're going to go with sleds, you can do like sidewalks that helps with the frontal plane. So I like doing that. Really focusing on the knees, making sure that, you know, like ACL stuff won't occur, or keep it as minimal as possible, especially like, you know, I got airborne guys, you know, you don't, you know, that impact there. So, so I mean, that's keep it really simple, you know, I'm just very simple with like rotational med ball stuff, rotational with bands, and landmine stuff works well, I think, with rotation as well. That's about it.
Yeah. With the knees, we'll do a lot of TKEs.
Okay. Yep.
We'll do a 4-way TKE, so that way we're not just hitting that front side.
Yeah.
But I really like that. And I know the guys are bored to death with it, but, you know, when I start explaining to them, like, hey, you know, we've got to have the stability in the knee. Yep. And here's how and why it's important. So don't just go through the motions on this one. It actually has to be slowed down and methodical. You can't just... I like that lateral sled walk, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like doing it, but I think it's a very effective, good one the guys need to be doing.
Just like Bulgarians, no one likes doing them, but they're always in a program.
I saw a meme last week. This dude was like, you know, he texts his coach. He's like, "Hey, coach, can you take out the Bulgarian split squat?" And the coach sends back split squats. Like, what the hell, man? It's the same thing. But yeah, any kind of single leg work, just the worst part is like you have to go back and do the other leg.
Yeah,
you're just gassed.
The other week I did kettlebell front rack elevated split squats, and that is a pain.
You had the elevation on the front side and back foot, so you're going down.
No, it's just the front foot elevated. Okay. I had it was 70 pounds in each arm or something like that. And it was rough. It was like sets of eight. I'm like, this is bad choice.
Just laying on the floor dying afterward.
Yep. Because it's just like you get to the second leg and once you're done with that, it's just like, all right, I need like 4 minutes of recovery here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, I was playing around with that. The one where you basically elevate, you know, say you've got two boards under the front foot and one board under the back, and then you've got that increases the distance. I saw that first from Joe DeFranco, and it's pretty sadistic, you know, like really increases the range. And whether you're doing, you know, front rack, you know, single arm, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's a way to get even more range through that loading pattern.
Yeah,
and that's another thing that I'll talk to guys about. And just, you know, we had five new guys get up here last week and talking about like, hey, none of you need to be married to any specific exercise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you have no idea this guy's training background. He might have garbage shoulders. So, you know, based on that, a back squat might just be out of the question.
Yeah.
Because of the external rotation that you're having to hold that bar in for so long. So
I like safety bars.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Do you have those Kabuki?
No, I don't. I have the Elite FTS one.
The SS yoke one?
Yep.
Yeah. And anything where those guys can grab and it's like, hey, we don't even have to worry or consider the shoulders in this one necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see a guy doing a different thing, don't think it's better or worse. It's an alternative for a lot of reasons. But
mm-hmm. Oh, and then what is other things I've heard of using... you know, safety bars like that, but they have pads on it. So they're, you know, bitch pads. It's just like, no, just stop right there. It's a whole different movement. And it's just, it's like, you can't squat with because of your shoulders. I mean, it's just like, well, you're going to be able to squat with this and then mm-hmm. try it out. And it's like, oh, wow. I'm like, yep, it works.
Yeah. Yeah. Same thing with, you know, like we'll get into going back to the training age on some of these guys when we're going over deadlift progressions. I like to start them out on a high handle trap bar dead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's the shortest range that I can have where the least amount of likelihood that something could go wrong, you know? Mm-hmm. So the shortest distance where they're squared up, mm-hmm. and then we'll gradually increase that distance and eventually move it into a straight bar and then all these different positions. But Mm-hmm. You know, some of these guys just come in for some reason with that mindset of, well, there has to be a straight bar, it has to be a squat, and it has to be a bench and a dip. And if it's not, it sucks.
Exactly. And we're not power lifters, guys. Calm down.
Yeah, take it easy. But yeah, man. So anything else you wanted to cover or get into? Or
no, I think that's it. I mean, it's just, you know, everything's for the soldier. You know, they're the ones on the ground doing all the work, and so we got to make them the best that they can be.
Yeah, for sure. What about, you know, so social media, where can people find you? And do you have a blog that you maintain, or any kind of thoughts you put out about training, nutrition, recovery, anything like that?
Something that I've been wanting to do for a while. I need to get on it. I do have an Instagram. I'm more active on Instagram than any other, well, LinkedIn too, but it's just my first and last name. So you can look that up, Joe Zubak, and you'll be able to find me.
How do you spell Zubak real quick?
D-Z-U-B-A-K.
All just one word for the Instagram?
Yep, it'd be Joe Zubak, just all one word.
Gotcha. Okay. So. And then are you like the only Joe Zubak on LinkedIn, or there?
Yes. Yep, okay. I am.
Well, that makes it easy. Sweet, man. Well, thanks a lot for hopping on. I really appreciate it. And
thank you.
I'll get this chopped up and posted within the next couple of days.